afternoon and welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Looking out of the studio windows, I can see some blue sky here in the upstate. For all of you refugees from the coast, hope you've had a good stay. I will say it's not over. Pretty nasty mess down there, and will be for a while. But, you know, on a personal note, it's been a good week for me. Charleston Southern University shut down Tuesday, and so Jordan came home Tuesday night. She was supposed to come home, what, yesterday?
Yes, yesterday.
And instead she got to come home Tuesday night, so she and I got to spend some time together. We went to the farm and did a little deer hunting, and we did a little sitting in the stand and sitting on the porch. It's been kind of difficult to shoot a deer at 245 yards with a bow. And then on Wednesday morning, we came back Wednesday morning, Taylor and I got to, well, go ahead. I've got my daughter Taylor with me.
Oh, hey, y'all.
Tell them who we talked to this week.
Well, I had my first interview with Eva Shockey. She is one of the best woman hunters in the U.S., and she was the second woman on the cover of Field and Stream.
Yeah, we did a joint interview with Eva, which will air at the bottom of the hour. And impressions, what'd you think?
Oh, my goodness, she's amazing. I love her.
I knew that'd be your reaction. I met Eva at the Archery Trade Association back in January and spoke to her just a few minutes and then got a hold of her, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, maybe 5 weeks ago. And she's extremely busy. There's a lot of words to come to mind. But for her to fit us into her schedule, and as I see, she's at the North Carolina State Notre Dame game, which is being played in tropical storm conditions out there, which is real football. I mean, but she's at the game today, but she's extremely busy. But we did have a good interview. I hope you'll enjoy it. But yeah, I've done the show thing with Taylor, and Taylor's here with me today, and then Jordan's been home, and it's been good. But I tell you, man, our coast is taking a pounding, and it could have been a whole lot worse. It depends on which end of the coast you're on. You know, it looks like Beaufort and Hilton Head and Edisto really have the most damage, I guess. I mean, I think there's a couple houses down on Edisto. The roads, I don't think it's buckled, but it looks pretty bad going in. Luckily, Matthew came through at low tide. Now, you know, if you don't know the tide systems in South Carolina, we're probably at mid lunar cycle between a full moon and a new moon was a couple of weeks ago. Full moon's a couple of weeks ahead. And those are when we get the really big tides on a black moon and a full moon. But it was low tide when it came through. And normally in Charleston, in a mid tide cycle, you know, 5.5 to 6 foot tides between low and high, and there's two a day. So last night when Matthew came through at low tide, it was good because the water level in Charleston Harbor was 9 feet above normal at low tide. And even then, downtown Charleston probably has 3 feet of water in it right now. But as you go up, like I was just looking here a minute ago, the Sunset Bridge going into Sunset Beach, North Carolina, is underwater. The causeway where it leaves the land is underwater. You can't get across it at all. But see, it's high tide there. So you've got 6 feet of normal tide, and you got, you know, what, 6 or 7 feet, maybe 9 feet of additional water push from the hurricane coming through. So that's how it happens. But, yeah, it's going to be – and don't try to go down. I had a buddy of mine left Columbia this morning trying to go back to Sullivan's Island. Couldn't get on the island. Made it all the way down, but said there's – I don't know, he counted like 15 trees on I-26 down below Columbia to Charleston on the interstate. And he couldn't get on to Sullivan's Island because the power lines are down, and also – if you're here, you're going to be here for a few more days. Be patient. That's what they ask. They're down there trying to get everything straightened up right now. But it's going to take them a while. So just be patient with them. They'll do their best, as they always do with this type of natural disaster. And there's, boy, I tell you, yesterday afternoon when you saw it take that turn north and you just knew it was coming. Luckily, it was down to, what, a 2 when it came ashore this morning? 85-mile-an-hour winds or so. But anyway, so just for those of you evacuated and are here, hang out with us a few more days. We're pretty good folks up here in this part of the state. And I hope when you get back down there, things aren't as bad as they seem from here today. Speaking of, you know, and for you deer hunters who are club members, you know, anywhere from Columbia below, you got a ton of rain to deal with. I don't know if it's going to be bad as the floods of last year, but there is a lot of water trying to make its way either down the rivers or up from the hurricane. So, it, you know, when you go in hunting over the next week or so, you know, before you climb in that tree stand, check it out pretty good. I don't know if a tree stand has ever buckled. I don't know if you could get a tree sway in with a ladder stand up against it, whether it buckled a ladder or not. But just you know, I wouldn't go in there 6 o'clock in the morning expect to climb it. I'd make my first hunt in the afternoon. That's just me. And also with all the wind, you know, the acorn, the crunch of acorns for deer could be really, really short this year because, you know, 30, 45 mile an hour winds, it's going to blow every acorn off a tree. So maybe for the next week or so, you're going to be able to hunt the acorns, and then they're probably going to be gone. And after that, hope you have food plots in. And speaking of deer and deer hunting, your first is coming this week.
Mm-hmm. I'm so excited. I got my doe tags the other day, so I'm ready to go.
Yeah, Taylor is officially going to have the gun this week. It's a really scary thing. I'm glad the barrel is just a little bit longer than the distance between us and the stand. But we got an old box stand and got it cleaned up, cleaned out shooting lanes, and have a food plot planted out in the middle of the pine trees. And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be. I haven't been in that stand in a long time to hunt it. I built it when your sister was small.
When she used to fall asleep in the stand?
Yeah, when she used to fall asleep in the stand. And that's okay. Look, dads, if you're going to take your kids hunting, it's all about them. It's not about you. So to get Jordan to go with me, she'd take a book, and she'd read for about 10 minutes, and she'd be asleep. And I'd wake her up about the time dusk got here. I'd nudge her and say, okay, Jordan, it's time to get up now. Deer might start moving. Don't laugh. You've fallen asleep on me before, too.
That was one time.
It doesn't matter. All it takes is once. Your record is ruined, see?
Oh, gosh.
But anyway, I'm looking forward to taking Taylor. It's, I hope she, having tagged along with me for so many years now, understands it's not about pulling the trigger. It's more about being out there, enjoying those woods, waking up, enjoying watching them go to sleep. It's about respect for the environment, respect for the animal. I mean, I don't know what your reaction is going to be if you actually shoot one.
I think I'll be ecstatic.
Well, you will, but there'll be a time there where your emotions will take over. It happens to everybody, and it should. It's you don't catch and release a deer when you pull the trigger. So, but I want you to know about respect. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the biggest thing. From the moment you leave the door out in the woods and till the moment you get back, it's about respect. And then when you leave the door and come back here, it's about respect too, you know. She'll follow you your whole life. But anyway. Okay, enough of the father lessons to her daughter. We're gonna have a calendar in the next segment. Quit laughing at me. Well, I must say I have a wonderful relationship with my daughters, if I say so myself. It's not that it hasn't been tough at times, but we have a good time, don't we?
Oh yeah. Well, butt heads at times, but it always gets better.
We do. We butt heads. You and I are so much alike. And that makes life very interesting. But, okay, we can get back to the show next segment. We got some stuff on the calendar. And then Eva will be here. She won't be here. But the recording we did with Eva will be at the bottom of the hour. And if I have to take something away from that interview, she's a lot easier to talk to than I thought she would be. And a lot more fun, I guess. So anyway, it was a good week. So hang on. We're going to come back. We're going to go through a few things for the calendar. Got a couple stories on deer hunting, and then we'll get to Eve at the bottom of the hour. So hang on. We'll be back with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Woods and Water, South Carolina. I just had this cross my list Horry County, the Surfside Pier has been damaged, and the Spring Maid Pier, which was 1,060 feet long yesterday, is only 100 feet long today. So Spring Maid is at the south end of Myrtle Beach. Yeah, it went from 1,060 feet to 100 feet. So Matthew will I don't know if it'll be as bad as Hugo. I know they said the storm surge would be more than Hugo, but yeah, it's gonna take us a while, folks. But like the storms last year, the floods, which I was, you know, happened to be in Charleston while all that was going on, we'll recover. Strong state. I don't know. A couple of these things I had, like the Myrtle Beach Seafood Festival and the Bluffton Arts and Seafood Festival for starting next weekend, probably not going to happen, so we'll skip over those. You may check into some of those. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff going this month, and a lot of it's going to be affected by this. So anywhere you go or plan to go next week or the next 2 weeks, you check the websites and all and see. One thing I'm pretty sure will go on is October 19th at the Terrace Theater in Charleston, South Carolina, will be the 5th annual GoPro Film Festival. That's put on by the Charleston Angler. And if a picture's worth 1,000 words and 1,000 words, then what's a video worth? And they're going to the deadline to get your video in is passed. It was actually the 3rd. But sponsored by the Charleston Angler, GoPro, Shimano Fishing, and the Terrace Theater. And the Terrace Theater is a pretty cool place. That's where we used to have the Fly Fishing Film Tour before it moved on to its new digs in Charleston. But anyway, the winner's going to win, what, a new GoPro? It's a pretty good one. It's been a growing little festival in Charleston. So if you're down that way and want to check that out, that's Terrace Theater. You call the Charleston Angler and get more details for that. I got an email from Henry Barnett with the Department of Natural Resources this week. You know, hunting season is here. If you're born after June 30th, 1979, which you are, you need a hunter education endorsement unless you're under 16. So you're good. But if you're a kid, if you are going to take a kid hunting, you still have to have tags, especially if they're going to shoot a doe. So anyway, we got that out of the way. It is deer season. If you want to hunt pretty much anything, but deer being the biggest thing right now, you do need a hunter education course, and you can get those. There are 3 of them coming up October 15th at the Belton Depot, Main Street in Belton, South Carolina, October 22nd at the Foothills Community Church in Seneca, October 22nd at Calix Outdoors in Piedmont, and November 12th at the Walhalla Fire Department in Walhalla. And I believe these are Henry's puts on these. And that's why I got this email from him asking me to, you know, get this out there. You need to pre-register at the DNR website. And if you can't make a course, you know, they offer it online. So if you wanted to hunt this year and don't have it, you still have time to do it. Next week on the show, I'll have on a guest that's kind of not in the woods and water. It's more in the air. It'll be the Collings Foundation. They come around with their Wings of Freedom tour every year. This year, they're going to be here October 21st. They're going to be at the Greenville downtown airport on the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. And this year, there are a couple changes. Last year, they had Betty Jane, which was a P-51C, which was an old model, and the B-17, B-24. This year, they're bringing their new P-51D model, which is the bubble canopy version and a Rolls-Royce Merlin engine. And along with the B-17 and B-24 is going to be a B-25 Mitchell. So they're going to be, she's going to come on with, Jamie's going to come on from the Collings Foundation, tell you more about that. But that'll be something. It's a little bit off the woods and water thing, but it's okay. I'm a runway junkie, and I know there are a bunch of other people out there like living history. And you went out there with me last year.
It was amazing. I loved it.
Yeah. You met Jimmy Harley, who flies Betty Jane. Yeah. So anyway, that's coming up. That'll be on the show next week. Put that down. October 15th, Haygood Mill Storytelling Festival. Just a fun thing for you and the kids to go to. Each October, the hills and hollers around the Haygood Mill Historic Site in Pickens, South Carolina come alive with storytellers sharing the weird and wonderful mountain funnies, memories of yesteryear, and tales of way off and not so way off mystical places. This is the 15th annual Storytelling Festival. And they got some great people. There's $5 parking for this event, but the admission to the mill site and everything is free. So you get out there with the kids and do that and enjoy it. Let's see. The legendary Ultimate Challenge Mud Run is coming to Columbia, South Carolina, October 15th. Enlist your 2- or 4-person team now. And I love it. Adjust, adapt, and overcome. The reason we continue to host the Ultimate Challenge now has been always to honor the sacrifices of our Marines and veterans and do our part by donating all proceeds from our events to charities. So you can find more about this at the Ultimate Challenge Mud Run. It's going to be in Columbia. Clusters for Kids, October the 22nd at Aaron Farms. That's in Easley, South Carolina. Friends of Pickens County, Guardian Ad Litem, invites you to the third annual Clusters for Kids Oyster Roast. You don't like oysters, and they're in season, so it's going to start up here soon. Lots of good food to go to and eat. Anyway, you can find out more about that at Easley. Hook and Cook. Excuse me. Hook and Cook, October 21st to 22nd in Jackson, South Carolina. The town of Jackson, in partnership with Red Cliff Elementary School, invites you to the 9th annual Hook and Cook Festival. The festival includes live entertainment, a dessert competition. Saturday's festivities include a barbecue cook-off, fishing tournament, car and boat show, kids inflatables, and much more. And there comes that frog again. Let me get rid of him. But anyway, the fishing tournament's what I'm after here. And then the last one is a Bulow wild game dinner and skeet shoot. The lake house at Bulow is a former hunting lodge reminiscent of a secluded country retreat. They're having a wild game dinner and skeet shoot on October 23rd, 2 to 6. Dinner and skeet shoot, $70 per person. That you can find more information at parklandsfoundation.org. So, take a little swig of Snapple there. Get back on the horse. Deer hunting. Yes, it's front and center. And when I was younger, I had no problems getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and going deer hunting. What are you laughing at? Your time is coming. You will get this point in your life, too. I just happen to have a little, what would you say this? What would you call this? It's harder to get up in the morning. So when a story like this comes out, I latch onto it and say, I agree with everything he's got to say. The title of the article is 5 Reasons Not to Hunt Mornings. You're not a morning person either unless there's hunting to do, which is the way I always was. You get up now because, you know, it's fun. Then you get to sleep the rest of the day. Not so for us adults. Josh Honeycutt wrote this. This is actually a story from September 25th of last year. It starts out, mornings aren't the best during the early season. Hunting the first half of the day can do more harm than good. Hold off on morning hunts until the end of October. Until then, afternoons are your best bet, and here's why. Now, you listen and draw your own conclusions. Deer in bed. Most deer, especially mature bucks, are back in their beds before daybreak. And this is true up until the rut takes place, I think. Actually, they're making their way back to their beds just prior to daybreak. So you're more likely to bump a deer walking in than you are to see one from the stand. You know, I might agree with that one. You don't have enough experience. You can't weigh in on this discussion.
I've got enough to be plenty of mornings and seeing deer.
I know. Most of that's later in the season. This is October we're talking about, early season. You'll bump those that aren't. Most hunters that hunt mornings try to hunt food sources. Acorn trees, big this time of the year. There are very few times when September morning hunts should be over a food source. What deer haven't made it back to the bed by daylight are likely to be on the edges of food sources making their way to the bedroom. So you're going to run them out. Afternoons provide better odds. Evening hunts are great for killing afternoon deer. It's like night and day between a morning hunt and afternoon hunt. This time of the year, deer are stockpiling nutrients. They haven't received pressure and still on summer patterns. The best way to take advantage of these food-crazy whitetails is to hunt an afternoon. Use a quality scouting system to figure out where the bucks are entering food sources and when. Then decide how close you need to be to intercept them. It adds unnecessary pressure. Odds of killing a deer in the morning are little to none. Now, I don't know. I can disagree with that because I've spent enough time in the woods in the mornings, you know, to prove that. But just bear with it and, you know, taking it all together, it might be something you want to think about. What good does it do? If you only have a 5 or 6% chance of filling your tag, why put that unneeded pressure on the deer? The age-old theory states the more time you invest in a tree, the more likely you are to fill a tag. That statement is more false than true. You're more likely to fill a tag by waiting for the perfect conditions and then putting as much time in the stand as possible. And I'll kind of agree with that one. This last one, I'm in wholehearted agreement with. Has my full stamp of approval. And it says this, more time to sleep and scout. I don't know about you, but I like my sleep. I don't get a lot of it. That is me. But I take what I can get. Sleeping in on early season mornings makes me feel a little guilty. It does, but it's for the best. It's for the greater good. Plus, it gives me more time to scout, prep, and plan. And I was so guilty that this past week. You know, it was, I don't know, Thursday morning maybe. And an alarm went off at 6 o'clock. I was going to go hunt. The wind was blowing 15 miles an hour, and I was not going to go duct tape myself to a tree and hang on for dear life all morning. But I could not stay in bed. It was horrible. So I got up. I went out and sat on the deck. But, boy, would I have loved to sleep in. So I guess I'm kind of on that tipping point there. I like my sleep. I don't get a lot of it. And I'm starting to think early seasons, I'm just going to stay in bed. What do you think?
I don't know. I like to get up early and go hunting.
You like to get up and go hunt early?
Yeah, I do. It's exciting. You see the woods wake up.
She does have a point, folks. Watching the woods wake up. But it's even better when it's really, really cold and late in the season. So. Oh, yeah. What a song. Okay. Hang on through the break. Eva Shockey is going to be next segment. So we'll see you on the other side with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. This show is so much fun to do because you get to talk to so many different people, and this morning is no different. We are talking with someone whose father's a legend in the outdoor world and who is making a name for herself, and you could just describe her in so many words, but the word that comes to mind when I think of Eva Shockey is gracious, because she is gracious enough to take time out of her busy schedule to be here this morning. Eva, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're... you know, when I emailed you about coming on, you were sure I'd be love to do it. And I have my daughter, Taylor, here with me, who is real excited to talk to you, too, Taylor.
Hey, Eva. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Taylor?
Good.
Take just a moment, because, you know, some of my listeners may know you, may not know you. And tell us who you are and what your dad does and just a little background information for us.
Sure. My name is Eva Shockey, as you already said. My dad has had outdoor TV shows pretty much my whole life. I grew up around cameras and traveling and doing all kinds of hunting adventures around the world. And we also are outfitters for hunting areas. So we have an outfitting area in the Yukon where we take clients, and Saskatchewan and Vancouver Island. And over the years, there's a bunch of other ones kind of come and go. And so I basically just been brought up in the outdoors, and I started hunting a little later on in life. I didn't hunt till after university. My mom was not a hunter, and I was like, well, if she's a girl and she's not a hunter, I'm not going to be a hunter. But I didn't realize I can be a girl and still be a hunter and not have to choose one or the other. So I started hunting, and now I basically haven't stopped in the last 8 years.
And tell me, I keep up with you on Facebook from time to time. Now, you're about 6.5, 7 months pregnant, and you're fixing to go elk hunting, right?
Yes. I'm 6.5 months pregnant, and for the first time, first child, and I have an elk hunt in 2 weeks. So I'll be 7 months pregnant in New Mexico, up in 9,000 or 8,000 feet elevation or something. I'm not sure exactly, but I don't think it's going to be my easiest hunt, that's for sure.
Oh, I can probably assure you it won't be your easiest hunt, but I think you're just really trying to get a head start on bringing this child up in the outdoors, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I know that I was raised in the outdoors, and I was kind of brought along and treated just like, you know, they wanted to go on a trip, and they thought it was good for kids to experience that, and I did experience that growing up, and I really appreciated it. So hopefully my husband and I can kind of follow the same suit and bring our kids out and show them things that you wouldn't necessarily do unless you challenge yourself a little bit and know it's not going to be the easiest thing to do with children, or you could do it by yourself a lot easier, but it's a pretty cool thing to do when you're growing up.
Yeah, it is. It is. But you mentioned you know, growing up around the outdoors and all, but you really didn't start, and this answer may come as a surprise to some people that are listening, you really didn't get into hunting until later in your life. Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Yeah, so my dad obviously has been a hunter my whole life, and his whole life, and his grandfather's before him. But in our family, it's just sort of been a male thing, and okay. It's not a male thing in any way, like females can't do it. It's just there haven't been any females that have got into hunting in my family. And my mom she's actually a vegetarian ballerina when she met my dad. So she is about as opposite of hunting as you can get, short of being an anti-hunter.
Sure.
She's on the far end, though. So I just grew up, dancing. I was a competitive dancer. I played every sport, and I was very close to my mom. And I just kind of figured, well, she's so feminine and ladylike, I want to be like her, and she doesn't hunt, so I'm not going to hunt either. And I never really, it wasn't that I hated it. I loved eating the meat. I loved hearing about the stories and going on trips. I just didn't want to hunt myself. And I went to university, and I graduated, and I came home, and I realized that the big difference was when you're not around hunting. And I went to university far from home. I realized I couldn't fill my freezer with wild game unless I'm going hunting, because I can't always go into dad's freezer and try to take his elk or moose or whatever he has in there. So I basically came home and said, Dad, I want to learn more about what you do. I want to try hunting, and I'd like to be able to provide my meat for myself so I know where it comes from. And that was the initial start to hunting. And okay. I never, not with the intention of doing it as a job or following his footsteps or anything. It was just that I wanted to try it out, and it just kind of led to where it is today.
And today it is your life.
Yes, definitely. It's just been such an incredible journey, because I think there were some spots in the outdoor industry, and they needed more female hunters to mm-hmm. voice their opinions about how great hunting was. And I kind of filled one of those. There were plenty of others before me that did an incredible job and are still doing an incredible job. And I've had them to look up to, like Tiffany Lukowski from The Crush. She's a good friend of mine, and she's always done a really good job at representing female hunters. But it was just, I don't know, something God sort of led me on the right path that I was doing what I loved doing, and people were accepting it, and it just, more and more people thought it was a good thing. And yeah. I don't know, I just seemed to somehow be able to pay my bills by doing it, which is absolutely incredible.
And you often hear in the outdoor world, if you don't get them by the age of 12, you've lost them forever. And we're finding out more and more that's not true, because you're a prime example of it. You're around it, you know, kind of, okay, that's cool and all, but you didn't start it until later in life. And I think that's, to a lot of people, that gives us some hope that maybe we haven't lost a whole generation, that we can get them later in life when they've got some time, some spendable thing, and say, wow, that's pretty cool to do. I might try that.
Yeah, I think so. I've never heard that stat before, but I can imagine that a lot of people probably do think that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was opposite in our family. It was, if anything, it was that I was just really busy when I was growing up, and I had a lot of stuff. I mean, every tailor, I'm sure, is familiar with this. Lots of activities and schoolwork and homework and sports. I was really into sports, and I just didn't have the time to go on a hunt. And I don't know why. It just wasn't something that appealed to me. But when I got older and I really could stop and look at the big picture of what's healthy and what do I want to put into my body, and how do I want to spend my free time, and where do I want to go in the world and experience, I think it's actually a positive thing to be a little older, because you have the ability to recognize all those aspects and really appreciate hunting and all that it involves for what it is.
Well, there you go, folks. When you're out there, you've got kids, you know, just expose them to it. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to take it at a young age, but they might come back around to it later on in life. And I know, Eva, I'm going to turn this over to my co-host because she came up with a couple of questions that, and I told her when we were doing this interview, I said, I want you to get involved in this because this is two daughters whose dads hunt and get them outdoors, and I want to hear some from your standpoint. So I'm going to turn it over to Taylor, and she's going to carry you for a few minutes here on her own.
Okay, well, my first question is, like, I've had a lot of people give me grief because I'm a girl that likes to hunt, and I'm sure you sometimes get grief like that, but how would you respond if you were in my shoes?
You know, I think at the end of the day, people are maybe falling into the same old school mentality and stereotype that hunting's for boys, which it's absolutely not. There's nothing about hunting that is more for boys than for girls, which I honestly believe.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes they're a little bit intimidated because maybe they think you'll be better than them or be a better shot. If my dad will tell anyone who asks that he truly believes women or girls are better shots than guys with a gun. And that's because when we learn something, oftentimes girls will listen to the instruction and listen and take it in and really acknowledge what's being taught to them, and then they'll put it into practice. Whereas I think a lot of the guys are like, no, I've got this. I know what I'm doing. And they don't listen. And that's my dad says that's honestly in our experience. I mean, I can literally, in a high-pressure situation, his experience definitely trumps me. But in a controlled situation, I can shoot better than him. And he's done it for 30 years. And it's just something that if people are saying, oh, making fun of you for being a female that loves to hunt, it could be a little bit of jealousy, a little bit of nervousness. A lot of times they just don't fully understand what it is you love about it. And I like to take a moment and explain to them, like, I want to see where my food comes from. I love being in the outdoors. I love providing meat for myself and my family. And Taylor, when you get older, it could be, if you ever decide to have children, it's something that's very important to me that I feed my husband and my family meat that we understand exactly sort of the life it came from. It wasn't an industrial cattle farm where it had pesticides and everything in it, which there's some great farming practices around the world. Farming is great if it's done a certain way, but when you're a hunter, you know that this animal has had a free life. And I guess just explaining to them why you love it and not getting distracted by them bullying or what they're saying, and just being proud of who you are and standing up for what you love.
Yeah.
Your first thought that boys are intimidated by girls that hunt, I do believe that is true. And I also believe that they pick it up faster. Taylor shoots the National Archery and School Program. She started at 11 years old. She started competitive archery shooting, and she's very good at it. And I think girls, you're right, girls tend to come into it with no preconceived notions. Boys come into it with, I got this.
Yeah.
Which, again, is us stereotyping boys, so that's not really fair either, but I do agree with you that when I go in, I don't, even if at this stage in my hunting career, you're never going to catch me going into a situation where someone's more educated than me and me pretending like I know more than them. I want to learn from them. I want to follow their advice. I want to listen to them. I mean, I might not always take it forever, but at least I'll acknowledge what they're saying, and I think that's sort of a female mentality that we just want to be the best by learning from other people. I think it's, at least I'll speak for myself, it's how I function and a lot of women that I know.
I agree with you there.
So our dads have already wanted to take us outside, and that's been their main goal, is to keep us outside and in the outdoors. But for other dads that haven't started on this yet, do you have any advice for them if they want to take their kids hunting, like how to get them started on it? Do you have any advice for them?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think the biggest thing is it doesn't have to be a dad. It can be definitely a mom. I plan to be the mom and bring our babies out whenever they're a little bit older.
Yeah.
Preferably not while I'm still pregnant. Hopefully when the baby's actually a few years old. But it can be the mom, the grandfather, the grandmother, the aunt, the brother, the sister. I mean, as long as they're old enough that it's legal and they understand what they're doing, it's a great thing. I think if that mentor, older person, is not familiar with the outdoors and with guns and hunting and all that kind of thing, obviously they need to learn too, and it's never too late to learn. But things like joining your local archery club or taking your hunter education course or joining your local SDI, Safari Club International, or Ducks Unlimited Foundation, and going to banquets and going to events. Those are usually what I suggest for people that aren't super familiar, or if they are, it's also a great thing to do. But if they're not familiar with it, generally there are a lot of people there that can help them out and teach them and share information and still make friends that are in the hunting industry or hunting world. And it just kind of snowballs from there. Once you know somebody, that person will introduce you to somebody. And every hunter that I know loves when new hunters get involved. So it's generally a pretty supportive atmosphere. But just learning the ropes is kind of the first step. And I think taking your hunter safety course is a great one to start with to make sure that you're all in line and you follow all the rules. And then I would just say join a local club or bring your kids to it and just get them involved.
So there have only been two women on the cover of Field and Stream, Queen Elizabeth and you. I mean, that's amazing. What did that mean to you?
Yeah, that was very, very cool. It was a few years ago. I was in Russia at the time. My husband was playing. He was a professional hockey player, and he was playing in the Russian Hockey League. He's a Canadian guy, so we were living over there far from home, and I got an email from, I think it was through my agent, but from Field and Stream, and they said, we really want Eva on the cover issue. Can she come do a photo shoot? And I remember reading it thinking, there's no way that's what they meant. Like, maybe they meant I was going to be in the magazine, and there was just maybe my name would be on the cover, like something saying Eva, if there's an issue or an article inside about her. And I just didn't think there's no way that they actually mean cover. So I wrote back an email like, is this serious? Is this what they mean? Which even being in the magazine was an incredible thing. And I was very excited about that. And they wrote back and they're like, no, we really do mean the cover, but we need you here next week for the photo shoot. And so I flew all the way from Russia to New York City for the photo shoot. And it was, I think, 35 hours. Of flying, and then I got there, did the photo shoot for, I think it was maybe 8 or 10 hours, and I got right back on a plane and flew 35 hours back to Russia, which you can probably imagine is not something I would do for any less of a big deal in my life, because that's obviously a lot of traveling. But it was just incredible, because I really believe it wasn't that, oh, they want Eva Shockey on the cover. It wasn't because of me, of who I am, or anything like that. It was that I was representing the theme of the magazine, which is what's next, like what's coming up next in the hunting industry or the outdoor world. And they were showing that what's next is female hunters, female enthusiasts, females that love getting outside, sort of strong, independent personalities. And I was just representing all of those women. And it was pretty incredible and a huge honor to be able to be in that position, that they're recognizing women as up-and-coming demographic in hunting, which is absolutely true. We're the fastest-growing demographic in hunting.
You know, if you've got I know you're stressed for time and all. If you've got, take just a minute and tell us why you think there is such a blossoming segment of the population that are women that are getting involved in hunting.
I think it's a combination of probably a bunch of things. A big thing that's really helped with women getting involved, I would say, is probably social media, which it can definitely be good or bad depending how you look at it, but it's really allowed people to access other hunters that they find interesting and follow them and follow their adventure. And whether they follow me or they follow Tiffany or they follow Taylor Drury or a handful of other girls that are doing really incredible things and really promoting hunting in a great way, it lets girls like Taylor and like other girls her age and of all ages, I guess, really get on there and look and see how great hunting can be and how you can really show it in a positive light. I think a big thing is women are realizing a lot. They want to feed their families healthy meat, and wild game is as healthy and lean and pesticide free as you can really get. So that's a big thing, is just doing that. And I think there's a lot of, Outdoor Channel has a lot of TV shows now where women are hosting, and I think that's a big step in the right direction as well. They're showing that women can do whatever guys do. Women are just as capable of being hunters. And because of all these changes, the industry has adapted and they've created products specifically for females and for the female body and for our shape and weight and strength. Like, I have a signature series bow, which is for female archers, and it's high-end, which has never really been done before. A high-end female bow is usually, if you want high-end, you have to kind of buy the unisex one.
Right.
And then there's guns now that fit women, and clothing. Under Armour makes amazing clothing that fits a woman's body. And it's just stuff like that. All those things, I would say, really make us as females feel like we have a place in the industry and feel comfortable, and we're not intruding on a man's sport. It's just as much of our sport as theirs.
Yeah.
Well, I know I have to let you go because you got other things to do, but I think Taylor.
I would say I have. Yeah. I would say if I didn't have a meeting scheduled this morning, I apologize.
No. We certainly understand. I know what appointments and schedules are all about. I think Taylor would like to say something to you here at the end.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come talk with us about women in hunting, and you're just such a great role model to me. I want to be so much like you when I get older.
Well, I think you're doing a great job. If you ever get involved in the hunting industry, I think starting your own radio show would be a great start. I can't imagine doing what you're doing when I was 12, so that's awesome.
It's funny. She has somewhat of a little cult following. I know.
I totally believe that. Yeah. I could definitely imagine that.
I got invited to speak at a fly fishing club up in North Carolina, and towards the end, I mean, these are all retired guys. And towards the end, they were like, well, Roger, before you wrap up, we want you to tell us a little bit about Taylor, because they'd heard her on the radio show. And I'm like, excuse me? You want me to talk about my daughter?
You're getting, it's a little bit of deja vu of my dad's career.
Yes, it is. It was just,
why are these people here to see you?
Yes, that's right. Well, look, we just scratched the surface, getting to know you a little bit. I hope at some point down the road we can get you back on and do this again sometime.
That sounds good. I love it.
Well, thank you. Look, best wishes for the next couple of months with your elk hunt, the addition to the family, and know he'll be brought up right. And like I said, we appreciate you coming on, and we'll look forward to having you back on Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Great. Thanks. Have a great day, guys.
Same to you. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Bringing you back with a little Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora on the, I forget what you call it, it's a mouth tube. Yeah. I don't think they're speaking anymore. I think they had a big dust up, and I don't think they're getting along anymore. It's pretty sad, because they had that MTV live acoustic version they did of Wanted Dead or Alive. Probably one of the best MTV productions ever. So anyway, okay, back to the outdoors. I think you did a good job.
I hope I did. I love the interview. I love talking to her.
It's nothing like taking your 12-year-old and tossing her into an interview with somebody like Eva Shockey and hoping it all comes out all right. But the only way kids learn is to do. I mean, that was the way I was brought up. Look, hey, there's a tractor and a 5-foot bush hog. Go bush hog. You know, you want a deer stand, build it. So this is a little different in her case, but I don't know. She's aiming for her own TV show. She's aiming to kick me out of here. And I think station management's probably on her side. But anyway, I had a good time with you. You did a good job, sweetie.
Oh, thank you.
Very good. Celebrating 150 years of Winchester off and on here on the show. And there's just a lot on Winchester. But anyway, 1895, Winchester introduces its first commercial smokeless centerfire cartridges, including the 30-30 Winchester. When paired with Model 1894, it's the most famous deer rifle and ammo combination ever. And I've got one somewhere, like built in 1896. Actually, I know exactly where it is. But it was a wedding present for my brother, which is pretty cool. So next week, let's see what we're going to have. We're going to have Jamie from the Collings Foundation coming on, talking about their stop here at the Greenville Downtown Airport with their Flying Heritage Tour, P-51D Mustang, B-25 Mitchell, B-17 Super Fortress, and B-24 Liberator. I'm trying to get a hold of Brett Staten down at Clemson. He's doing research on take one, make one on the college level with college students. I think today they're having a clinic, a deer hunting, like a deer hunting 101 for college students today. So looking forward to that. And then coming up on down the road on the 22nd, we're going to have the sporting chef Scott Laceth is going to be back from California. We're going to talk about some venison recipes and whatever else he wants to talk about. So the next couple of weeks are going to be good. And the next couple of weeks, we're going to have a lot of politics. So your political section of Woods and Water for today comes from the mouth of Teddy Roosevelt, who said, a vote is like a rifle. Its usefulness depends upon the character of the user. Pretty good words to live by. And then, sort of on the conservation side, the nation behaves well if it treats its natural resources as assets, which it must turn over to the next generation, increased and not impaired in value. So, pretty good words to live by there from old Teddy. And speaking of, you know, this Western land thing, I think Utah is trying to sell off another 5,000 acres of public land. It's something you need your attention to if you're at all interested in the 460 million acres that are yours out west. Go to the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, read up on it, sign the petition to stop the sale of Western lands. And that's pretty much it. Thank you for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
Anytime. I know you are. Now you're going to go back home and do schoolwork, right?
Perfect. That's just perfect.
That's just perfect. The price you pay for getting out and running around with Dad. As always, thanks for tuning in. Make time to get outside. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget the camera. Be safe, and I'll see you next week on More Woods and Water, South Carolina.